Welcome to the BioCharisma Podcast. Here's your host, Christopher Gardner.
Good day, BioCharisma family. Today we have Ole Damigar joining the podcast to discuss the role that false flags play in our lives. I think I had Ole on for the second podcast ever, the second BioCharisma podcast, so this has been an absolute treat to have him back. I have friends in Belgium, and I was immediately worried upon hearing of the bombings that went off there, but knowing Ole and knowing the historical precedent that has been set and has been accelerated in the recent past, I tempered my emotional response by remembering that most of these events are not as they are depicted. Ole has been an investigative journalist for 30 years and has sussed out the main patterns of these thrust events. We cover in this podcast a lot of things from technocracy to democide to the changing of the moral standard that's going on right now, and just the way that those people that would use fear to control us, how they use this as sort of like a trauma-based mind control type deal. The reason why I cover this in the BioCharisma podcast is I really feel like once you have an idea of how people are being manipulated through fear standards, you won't ever be scared anymore. You'll actually come to life with a very fearless and courageous attitude. And Ole is just an absolute gem. When you listen to this guy, you can just hear it. As you listen to Ole, you can't help but feel his sincerity, which is such a beautiful thing. He's the opposite of shock jocks out there trying to promote fear and discord. It's refreshing to have such a solution-oriented and courageous individual back on the podcast. Please check out Ole's work on, I believe his website is lightonconspiracies.com. He's given thousands of interviews. And the thing I love about Ole is he is a revisionist historian. Like, he can back up everything that he talks about. He actually goes to these sites where assassinations and false flag operations occur, and he actually goes there and investigates it and vets the area out, which not many people on the internet can claim to do. And, you know, I've met him personally, and I think the guy is just a gem. So I want to do whatever I can to get his work out there. Plus, his work keeps all of us out of harm's way, which is an added benefit. So please enjoy the podcast with Ole. Our bumper music today is Ayla Nerio from The Ground Up. I love her music. Listen to her on SoundCloud whenever you get a chance. If you like the podcast, please subscribe. You can subscribe to us on iTunes right now. You know, like my webpage, biocharisma.com. Whenever you get a chance, and share the good stuff, okay? Thank you guys very much, and we will see you on the flip side. Welcome, BioCharisma family. We're back with Ole Damigar. I think you are my number two interview on my podcast. I thank you so much for that and for our friendship. You've really illuminated a lot of things for me. So, Ole, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience, and for those people that don't know who you are, what your specialties are and your field of interest?
My field of interest is peace on earth and harmony and equality among all human beings and animals, everything, you know. So I just want to create this paradise it's supposed to be. But this beautiful body called Mother Earth has like a cancer growth. It's very dark and very malignant, and it's spreading with
metastasizing.
It's metastasizing all over this beautiful body. And this is why I think it's so important that we expose these different tumors and see that they're actually connected to the same main tumor so that we can heal this beautiful body. And now I'm talking about the world today and where these cancer tumors are the terror events.
Right.
The metastases are the terror events, but we need to find the main tumor to understand what's going on.
Totally agree.
And this is, in my opinion, where we come to what is called the New World Order, and this small group of people, or whatever they are, who have selected themselves to be our rulers and have thought that what a great idea to turn the rest of us into slaves. And this is not on, in my opinion. So I'm devoting my life to finding the truth behind what's really going on. And I've been down this road for some 30 years where my main focus has been exposing false flag operations and top assassin nations, tracking down assassins, exposing them, exposing false flag methods, and also doing everything I can to expose them before they even occur, so that instead of always being one step behind, that we can get one step ahead and stop this madness.
Right. That's very commendable. You know, the way I look at all these events is that these events are traumatizing. Even if people try and shut them out, there's still this psychic trauma that everybody's pulling into their systems. So it's almost like this is a way of conditioning us through trauma-based mind control. I mean, I have friends of mine in these different areas where these attacks in Europe have been, and when I bring up the fact that they might be staged events, they're so emotionally attached already to the story that's been given to them, they're in utter cognitive dissonance if you give them any information to the contrary. You know, how do you see this from a trauma-based mind control perspective?
I totally see it like that, because the whole idea is it's been going on for, I would say, thousands of years, when a small group of people have decided that they want to rule the rest. How can a few control the masses? And the answer is every single time through fear. It is only by scaring the living bejesus out of us that we will bend over and let them steer us in whatever direction they want. Had it not been for the fear, we would have just gone on with our lives and said, you do what you want, I'm going to go my way. But here, through creating this outer boogeyman, that is the way they can get to us. So it's all based on an old Roman template called problem, reaction, solution. They, the few in power, secretly create a problem, secretly, so that we don't understand who is behind it. This is in the form of virus scares nowadays, mass shootings, so-called terror acts, and so on, to pump out horrific images and horrific narrative about terror threats and all of these things, to get us into an emotional reaction where we freak out and said, oh my God, help me, help me, help me, I need protection. So we turn towards the people that are there to protect us, we believe, not understanding that it's them behind these terror attacks. And then for us, when we say, please, please help us, then they will serve us their solution, saying, well, if we are going to solve this problem, we sure as hell need, and then here comes their solution. And every single time it's the same solution that you pay, the normal person pay, in the form of giving up their rights, their human rights, their civil rights. You have to pay billions for surveillance cameras, for body scanners, for having police in the street, military in the police, and for funding totally unjust wars.
I want to write a book, and I'm going to call the book Dying is Expensive, Living is Free. And the reason why is almost everything that costs a lot of money, I'm seeing as being a hoax. Like whether it's these false flag attacks, whether it's NASA, whatever you want to do. Like inflation is something that doesn't need to be there. You know, the debt-based monetary system, the way healthcare is run, all of these different things siphon our energy away, siphon our time away in the form of money, which is just our work. It's this huge, huge, huge waste of time. And if we didn't have these parasitical entities at the top of the pyramid, imagine all the energy that we could give to ourselves in self-empowerment. And so now I'm seeing, and you've remarked on this, there's this increased rapidity in events. It's like the events are happening quicker and quicker and quicker. What do you think that is? Why in today's timing of, you know, being at the end of March 2016, would there be this push towards ramping up as many of these events as possible? Do you have any correlation with that in your research?
God, yeah. In the old days, there were one of these things like once every third year or something like that. And then it started speeding up after Boston, Sandy Hook. That's where it started escalating with the mass shooting, especially with the mass shootings in the U.S., because we're back to the problem reaction solution, where in the U.S., you are the only people that are armed. You're the only population with guns. So that's why all the mass shootings occur there, because they want you to think that it's the weapons that are the problem. So give up the weapons and you will solve the problem.
Right.
No, you will solve their problem.
Precisely.
Because once you give it up, they can just move in without any resistance whatsoever. So I'm totally pro-peace. I'm a totally non-violent person. But I say, do not give up the guns. Don't use them, but keep them. Just because to work against their agenda or to stand up for your own power.
You know what that principle is? I've seen the most relaxed men on the world that I know are absolute killers. They're like black belts in judo, black belts in all the different martial arts. These men in a normal situation don't lose their cool because they actually have the capacity to defend themselves. When you don't have the capacity to defend yourself, you lose your shit when the temperature gets hot. And I see it over and over and over again. So I'm totally in agreement with you about of being weaponized in order to keep peace. it might sound contradictory, but it is essential.
It is totally bizarre, but sometimes you have to speak to people in their language, you know? Because we are not talking about normal people like you and I that are in where the goal is compassion, peace, harmony. That is not their agenda. They want death and destruction. They want killing. They want horrific events so that they can control and try and fill this black hole I believe they have inside of them that they can never fulfill because it is just like bulimia, you can't feed yourself. You're never satisfied. You can never fill this hole until you go the spiritual way. That is at least the way I see it. Greed will never be fed enough.
These
people behind this are so power hungry and so spiritually weak that, when you look at it, their talents are to be able to lie and deceive and manipulate and be cowards in the background, never taking a step forward, showing their real face, and so on. So these are not honorable people at all. And violence is one of their main tools. So sometimes you have to speak to them in the same language by, just like you said, become a black belt, not to use it, but to keep the cool in these situations. And this is in many ways, I am totally non-violent. At the same time, I'm a full-blooded warrior. You know, I have trained my whole life for this situation, but I'm doing it without weapons. I'm just doing it by putting myself in the light of truth and aiming it at them. And so far, so good.
Yeah, well, you are a warrior in the sense that you display courage, and you would be like the scout. Any army has their scouts. They send their scouts out to go see, to be informed of what the enemy is doing, the enemy's maneuvers, right? And one of the biggest social conditioning things I've seen occur is in modern times, most people think that the state is what's going to defend them. The state or the country is what's actually there to make sure that they're safe. And especially amongst the female populace I know, they get very turned off whenever there's anything conspiratorial being brought up, because the conditioning is such that there's a surrogate father figure, there's a surrogate caretaker that will always be there. But little do they ever know the historical precedence of democide. And, you know, most people do not know, because history has been rewritten by the victors, that the historical precedence is empires kill their own people. That's what they do. The oligarchs will cull the herd whenever they can. And now they're just getting so technologically advanced that they can do it without you even knowing. Whether it's modifying the weather or giving you GMOs or, you know, killing you with stress through finances. I mean, look at all the different ways that we're being attacked. When it comes to the events that you study, do you see this because the frequency of things are increasing? Do you see them pushing to a pinnacle event, or do you just see it because they can't keep doing this at such rapidity from my perspective, because then everybody becomes numb to it. So it won't have the same effect.
But this is the beauty of it all. I love it because they have tried to numb us down for such a long time through all these violent movies and video games and fluoride in the water and every way to numb us down so that we won't notice. At the same time, they need us to be sensitive enough to be scared. So it's working against them now that we you know, this is also why, for instance, ISIS, which in my humble opinion is totally their creation as a boogeyman. I mean, how many people did they need to simulate chopping the head off? In the end, there were like 200 on the beach. I mean, how do you pump it up when people get used to that as well? You can't do it, keep doing it. So they're in my opinion, they're freaking out because they're running out of options. They can't amplify it more because they come to a ridiculous level. And people also are waking up on an expansive, I mean, really explosive almost rate, I would say. When I see the difference now from only a few years ago, I'm surrounded by millions of people that are awake. And a lot of them, I tell you, and they are super sharp, are the women. Because this is my experience that I have from all over the world. I get emails, please check out my guest book on my website, Light on Conspiracies. You will see there's so many beautiful messages, especially from women from all over the world that are so awake and are actually struggling with their spouse, because the males are the ones that are asleep in many aspects.
Yeah, I've seen that. So I've seen that also. It's what I'm pointing to a lot of times is just in general discussion, because you and I kind of where we live and who we interact with, we're in like the black sheep zones of the world. We've congregated around people that are of similar mind and interest. What I'm talking about is like usually when I go into areas that are more urban, that are more first world programs or geoengineered in a way, whenever I start to speak about conspiratorial things in those particular zones, I'll watch the men kind of perk up, and then I'll watch the women completely tune out. And so at first I thought it was the way I was presenting it or the actual topics themselves, but I started to talk to Sophia Smallstorm about it a little bit, and we were in total, you know, sympathy with each other at this point. Is that there's this notion of the surrogate father that's been displaced onto government, especially in the United States. I can speak firsthand about the United States. That Big Daddy will be there to take care of you. And so what this does is in interpersonal relationships, it creates a false notion that the man that's right in front of me, the man that I'm with, his one of the roles of men is to protect. That's just... It's just a fact in nature. We're here to protect. We're here to protect our loved ones, our family, our friends. What this does is it almost castrates the men that they're with, in the sense that, oh, this man is impotent. Like, he can't actually do what he's supposed to do. Big Daddy's going to take care of it. So she and I were lamenting this fact that, at least in the West, there seems to be this... castration on a couple levels of manhood. One of the castrations is just with the food. You know, the food, most of all, like, really diminishes a man's capacity to do work. Secondly, is if you do watch any of the Hollywood media out there, all you see men are is bumbling idiots and or superheroes. You don't have anything in between. You don't have any just normal guys. You have the bumbling idiot in a romantic comedy that, you know, is always stumbling over himself to somehow, you know, prove his worth, or you have a superhero. Neither of which are, they're like opposite ends of the spectrum, right? So you have the food that castrates him, then you have the actual social condition, the social conditioning of media, and then you actually have the social conditioning that's given through education. And all of these kind of lead to this like total, I just know a lot of men in my life that are just like, you know, family's not worth it, this isn't worth it, you know, I'm not ever supported by the female energy. And my own notion is that, and this might be really archaic, most men will only rise to the level that their women require them to rise to. So if women aren't actually holding their men to a higher standard and requiring that of them, the men actually drop. So that would actually reflect what you're hearing in your message boards. And I guess in a way I'm kind of answering my own question. I can see the full circle in this. Where I'm getting to specifically with what you do is I've noticed a tremendous resistance to talking about conspiracy amongst, well, most people, but especially the modern woman, I should say, if I was to give it a generalist moniker. They really don't want to hear it. You know, they want to believe that this stuff is actually happening and that government will be there to take care of them. So that's just what I've been noticing. I could be totally off base with that, but I've definitely seen that in my own existence.
I can only say that it's a very, very painful awakening once you see, because I come from that background as well. I thought I could totally trust the police. I could totally trust the politicians that the guy, I mean, I grew up in Sweden. In Sweden, everybody is being told that it is the perfect country, the perfect democracy, the white island in the world, you know, that is just so shining and wonderful. And then once you start seeing, and you really, I mean, I spent like 12 years just digging into the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, and that took me into some extremely dark areas that I had no idea about, and I'm still almost on a, not on a daily basis, but on a, at least a monthly basis, where I come to new areas in history and so on that I thought I knew what actually happened. I mean, I'm well studied in history and so on, I thought, and now it just comes out more and more that, oh my God, that is based on lies as well, and that, and that, and then that, and then that. Because just like you say, history is written by the victors, and also to control the population.
A complete severing of people from their ancestry. There's a few different attacks that I see that make this frontal assault that you're dealing with right now with all these different false flag attacks and staged events. That's one edge of the attack. The other edge was to sever us from family, to make family as difficult as possible through financial constraints. The other way is to sever us from family in the sense of severing us from our ancestry. You know, if you rewrite history and then you automatically are told that your ancestors were, you know, bigoted liars that could never do anything, couldn't put one foot in front of the other, you're going to have a sense of guilt for your ancestry. Right? You're going to have this sense of, oh, I'll speak for myself. I've had guilt for being white, you know? Almost all of this is being found to be called weaponized anthropology. It's the anthropologists that were funded by all these foundations were told what to write and to actually create social conditioning to separate us from our roots. And it's just like any tree. If a tree is separated from its roots, it's very easy to push over. And so, I mean, I'm just seeing an attack on all sides.
I can only agree. This is what is so remarkable, is that in my opinion, it is almost like being in the center of a storm, you know, it's totally calm where I am. But when you look at the world around, it's like being in a full-blown tornado where we are being attacked from on all different levels at the same time, through the air with chemtrails, through food, through vaccines, through financial attacks, through propaganda that is just at this point absolutely mind-blowing once you start understanding what's going on, through false flags and unjust wars. It's just so many things that are connected, because the power structure behind all of this has worked very, very focused for many, many, many years to concentrate the power to fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer. And they focused on all the main areas in life that really can affect the population. Some of the most important ones are through food, but also media, film, music, these where they can really get into your subconscious and take control there. So it's they have worked very, very efficiently with a very strict agenda towards this, and now we're at a point where it's like looking at an octopus where all the tentacles are just all over the place. So this is also positive in one way, because it will take you back to the same group. Whatever area you study and you really dig deep, you will be brought to the same center. I think in the latest James Bond movie, they've even come up with this whole thing with Spectre and the octopus and these dark rooms where you got people from all over the world, representatives from all different countries that are there without the people knowing it, and also the security or these intelligence agencies working totally together, trying to go under one global control. It is exactly what they're doing.
It's incredible that Hollywood always has to tell us. You know, Hollywood does the sorcerer's wand. I mean, I think it was you that revealed the whole notion of the hermetic law, in the sense that if I tell you a lie and I get you to believe it, I have spiritual dominion over you. But the way I negate karma is I told you. I told you what I was going to do to you. And if you're too stupid to understand, or too stupid to react and be responsible, that's all responsibility is your capacity to respond. If you fail to be responsible, the karma is on you.
That is how I've been informed from the inside, how the so-called elite interprets the law of karma. If they show what they're going to do to their victim, us, and we don't react, then the karma is on us. And I'm a good friend with a former assassin. His name is Chip Tatum. He's a former CIA operative for 25 years. He was a deep cover agent. And he was also one of the top assassins in an ultra-secret hit team called Pegasus, under the direct control of George Bush Sr. So this is not an amateur. I would really say, look into him, chiptatum.com, and you will see that I would say he's the closest to a real James Bond as you can come. I mean, he doesn't look like James Bond, but otherwise than that, when you look at his life, absolutely incredible. And he became a whistleblower in the 90s when it came to a big confrontation with Bush and the other big boys, so he's now doing everything he can to redeem himself by exposing these things.
How can somebody like that be alive?
Because it's a long story, but it came to a point where he refused to take out a person. It was Ross Perot. Do you remember Ross Perot, the billionaire?
Yes.
Said he wanted to. He was very upset because he found out that there were people still left in Vietnam, prisoners of wars that are still rotting over there. And he got so upset when he found out that they were still there that he went to see Bush and say, come on, we need to do something about it. But Bush didn't want to know anything about it, so he refused to see him. So Ross Perot said, he gave him the finger more or less and said, okay, then I'm going to run for president. I've got the billions. I've got the power. I can do it myself. So Bush Senior saw him as a real threat because he knew the power behind that guy's money and so on. So he ordered Chip to take him out. And Chip totally refused, even though he's been part of many different assassinations. But he said, I have never, ever, he's always been a military working under orders, under all the presidents from Nixon and onwards. And he just says, I have never, ever agreed upon killing American citizens on American soil, whatever the difference is. But for him, for Chip Tatum, there was a massive difference there. And it just came to an absolute confrontation. So Bush wanted to terminate Chip. But what had happened was that Chip had worked under many years under the wings of Bill Colby, the former CIA director that had really taken him almost as a son. He was the one that recruited Chip when he was 19 and or forced him into this line of work. And over the years, when Bush came into the CIA, Colby said, he called Chip and said, listen, there's this guy coming. He's a real bad boy. And you need to start collecting what they call insurance. You need to get as much heavy evidence that can be used as a insurance against these boys. Because otherwise, Colby said to Chip, I'm finished anyway. They're going to get to me. And Colby were later found drowned, as you remember. One night he was sat down for a late dinner and suddenly he went for a walk and died with his canoe outside the coast. You know, the food was still on the table, everything. It was an absolute total murder. And he knew it. He knew that he was going down, but he wanted to save Chip. So Chip, during the years of many of these operations, he was collecting a lot. And one of the things he did was he was one of the pilots in the Iran-Contras scandal, where they flew weapons out from the National Guard in Arkansas and other countries.
Flying down to Costa Rica.
States, flying down to where you are, to Honduras, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Nicaragua, these countries, and then bringing back drugs, which Chip wasn't even aware of. He was just flying these big C-130 planes and medevac planes. And then one day, one of these coolers where the drugs was in fell over. They had a bad landing. And this thing fell out. And he was like, what the hell is this? So he went to Oliver North. That was his the guy he was under. He was under his command. Yeah. So he went to Ollie North and said, what the hell is this? And Ollie said, well, that is just the winnings of war, I think he said it. So just forget about it. Don't worry. But at that point, Chip said, oh, my God, we are part of a massive smuggling route that he was not aware of. He thought he was just into black ops, you know, military training, recruiting the Contras and so on. He thought he was working as a soldier, more or less. And suddenly he was a drug a runner, you know.
Which was so done by the U.S. in Vietnam, right? Like the United States is very well reported.
It's the same people. We're talking about the exact same people in different operations. You had Operation Phoenix in Vietnam and with Air America, all of these things. So many things in around the Vietnam War was because of drugs as well, you know. So and here, but what he did was that he started, they had cameras on these planes. They put in cameras, hidden cameras. So he filmed Bill Clinton, who was the governor of Arkansas, together with his partner, Dan Lasseter, when they were personally there receiving the drugs. And Bush Sr. was also there receiving the drugs.
And this was Clinton's, you know, ticket into office. Like because he went along with this, eh?
No, he not went along with it. He was a drug dealer, big time. I mean, this is a shady guy if you've ever seen one. And Hillary, let's not even go there. I mean, these are super criminals, and the whole Bush bunch as well. But Daddy Bush and his father Prescott Bush, these are the heavy super criminals.
Arch criminals.
Oh my God, I mean. George Jr., or Boy George, as I call him, a joke, but a like a different cover of the same magazine of death and destruction is actually covering a massive big tank behind it. You know, you got this glossy front cover that is now with Obama. He's totally in on all of these things. It's just a different face, but there's some real players, and George Bush Sr. is one of them. So I tell you, I just had a call here from a former assassin in the British Army. So it's like my world. I don't know. I live in a crazy world at the moment.
So let's look at this, though. There, if we started this conversation off with what we were saying is trauma-based mind control.
Yeah.
For the masses. These stage events are that. They condition us to either respond or not to respond, like a Pavlovian response, right? And they can pretty much now gauge everything where people's emotional body is with social media. Like if an event happens in a certain country and you automatically aren't flying the colors of your flag on your Facebook page, you're seen as like an enemy of the state, right? So when we have this trauma-based mind control, you're seeing both sides of it. You're seeing it from the mass perspective, and now you know you actually have direct contact with assassins. Were the assassins indoctrinated with the same type of conditioning? Have they ever described to you how they got into doing what they were doing and why they could actually go that route,
Most of these operations are totally compartmentalized. So the people on the street level who are carrying out whatever dirty deed and so on, they have no idea about the whole picture. Very, very little. And no one asks questions. If you start asking questions, you're dead. That is sort of a general rule. When it comes to, I don't know that many assassins, but Chip is the one that I'm closest to. And he's a CIA for over 25 years. They say CIA, once CIA, always CIA. So it's hard to know, can you trust someone like that or not? It's very hard, and I don't know. I'm naive. But so far, Chip has been answering my questions very, very truthfully, as far as I can see it, opening himself up, very vulnerable to some of it. And I asked him, when it comes to assassins, and these type of people, what do you see? What are the types? Who can do these things? And he told me that there are three types of assassins. They're the young that believe that they're doing it for their country and for democracy. But he says that wears off within a month or two. After a few months, they understand too that they're just being used as a very brutal deadly weapon in ice cold business. It is business, no feelings, no compassion. Then he said the second type are people that know that it's wrong what they're doing, but they're too greedy. They're in it for the money, and they kill people for the money. They take the money, and many of them have problems with nightmares and things like that afterwards. You know, they struggle with the emotions. And then he said the scary ones are the ones that he called the dead eyes. He said these people are so damaged, their souls are so damaged, that they are totally without any emotion when it comes to hurting people, torturing people, killing people.
There's zero empathy.
And Chip said that he's got nightmares. I mean, he's been involved in a lot of ugly, ugly stuff, I tell you. And he says he's got nightmares where he's lying on his back in his bed. He's asleep, but he's awake, if you know the feeling. And he's got one of these dead eyes right on top of him, breathing on him, you know, staring right into his eyes, but he can't move. And I mean, just the thought of it, that is a scary nightmare, to say the least.
Did you ever see
the movie?
I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is really pertinent. The movie that freaks me out the most, that really takes a snapshot of what you just described, was the movie Michael Clayton. It was with George Clooney. Did you ever see that movie?
Nope.
You have to see it for its sheer brilliance of one scene. It showed these assassins taking out this lawyer who was blowing the lid on a company that was essentially portraying Monsanto. So it showed the assassins and how they killed this man and how methodical it was. And the beauty of the scene was there was no music, there was no dramatization. It just showed as the man enters his apartment, bam, chloroform. They stick him with a needle, they lay him down, they make the whole situation look like it was a suicide in like 2 minutes. It was like 2 minutes. Bam, 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 bam. And just how cold the whole thing was. And it was just from a phone call, somebody saying, this is a threat, we need him taken care of. And the beauty of that scene was that, to me, is the most honest depiction of probably how a lot of this stuff goes down. There is no thinking involved. It's just bam, 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 done. Money's in the account, over with.
This describes exactly Chip, you know. It's like he was the best. He was the best at flying whatever. I mean, this guy can fly anything as far as I know. And he can also get off the radar without any technical equipment. And many people try to get the knowledge from him. How does he do it? And he just laughs and said, I'm never going to tell you. But anyway, also when it comes to as an assassin, he was the top guy. That is also why he was used for so many years. And for him, he was a soldier. I'm sure he's had loads and loads of medals and all of these kind of things hanging on his uniform. He was working directly with the different presidents. I mean, this was a very successful man. The only difference with him and other people was that his business was killing. But if you look at it, if you change the moral standard a bit, look at a person who is a butcher. You know, sometimes I feel, what is the difference? You know, we had a neighbor, a very, very gentle man, that was a butcher, that I know had murdered hundreds of cows and pigs and so on. Here it is, the difference is this is a human being, and we are being brought up thinking, if you kill someone else, you're a monster. Okay, but these borders get very easily erased after a while, because like Chip, when he went into the army because he thought he could get more babes. You know, he was a surfer from Miami, and he thought it's really cool.
Oh,
you know,
he's a Miami boy. That's where I'm from.
He's a Miami boy. Yeah, he lives in Miami. He thought, well, I'm gonna get into it. You know, like so he had no idea. He was lazy and just laid back and all these things, and he was told, you know, I can't remember what it was he was trained for, but it was like a fight observer more or less, and he thought he was gonna lie somewhere on a hill, and that he was gonna report that, okay, you're shooting too short, you know, the artillery fire needs to go 100 meters forward or something like that. That is what he was informed. But the thing was, what he did not understand was that he was going to be right in the line of fire and keep a lot of very, very important information on him, you know, with the maps and all of these things. And also, at all times, he would be have a partner next to him. And after a while, he found out that the task of that person was that if anything happened, that person should kill him. Because this information that he was having could not be shared with the enemy. So he was like running around with his own butcher, you know. But anyway, what happened was that he was only 19, very naive. Had no intention of becoming a military or anything like that. And then one day, there was a man who, I think he broke his leg or something like that when he jumped with a parachute. And this guy was supposed to be in an operation going into Cambodia. They were going to go to the airport there, blow it up, make it look like it was the enemy, but so that the government would seek the support from the U.S. You see, we're back to the false flag again. So this guy broke his leg, and they needed somebody to replace him. So they were just looking around and said, "You come here." So suddenly Chip was in this operation, having no idea what was going on. He was just naive, 19 and so on. They went, they had prisoners with them that they, they put the enemy uniform on them. They went to the airport, they blew it up, they killed these people in so that there were bodies there in the correct uniform so that the blame would be in the right direction. And then they left the area in trucks. So Chip said, just the thing of seeing people killed and being part of the whole thing, he was very shaken and shocked, you know. And then the truck went off into the jungle, and suddenly he said he felt this tension in the air. And within a few seconds, suddenly his commander just pulled out his gun and killed all the people that was not in his group. And it turned out that these people were there to eliminate Chip and his group so that there would be no traces of it being a false flag. But these were Americans that were there to kill them.
Right.
Do you know? So once again, he was totally shocked, you know. And then they spent like 2 or 3 weeks in the jungle trying to get back to their own they were behind enemy lines, so they needed to get back to the U.S. Troops, and they were captured. I think there were 13, and in the end, there were only two left. I mean, it was just like Deer Hunter, you know. They were in these cages. They were being tortured. It was horrific. And then finally, the U.S., some army patrol found them. They were not looking for them, but they attacked the camp. And in that attack, Chip was hit by shrapnel. I think, I'm not sure if he was shot as well, but he went into a coma. And when he woke up after that, Bill Colby was sitting on his bed.
Wow.
At that time, he was known as the ambassador. And so Bill Colby was sitting there. This was before the CIA and so on, but there was while he was very, very much into these big operations we were talking about before with drugs and so on. And Colby said, "Listen, son, we are in a bit of a difficult situation here because you know too much. You have seen things you are not supposed to see and survive, but here you are now. So you have an option. Either we kill you or you work for us. The choice is yours." So as a 19-year-old that has just come out of coma with shrapnel in his back and a bullet hole in his body, what would you choose?
So life.
That is what he did. He chose life. And can you imagine working with the same people that you know just tried to murder you? I mean, he said that is horrific. And then they sent him in different operations, and he said, when you are in gunfights, you know, under gunfire, where you see your friends being shot to pieces, you know, the intestines coming out of their stomach, the heads blown off and so on, you get angry. You get very, very angry, is what he said, and that anger takes over, and you just want to kill back. And he says you get into this mindset. I think when you see Natural Born Killers and these, especially that film that really shows the devil coming forward in you. I mean, most of us have that in us. I think in our setup that we are capable of doing horrendous stuff in these situations if we cannot control these dark forces inside of us, if we let them take over.
This really brings up the notion of corruption. And the way I've been looking at corruption is corruption right now is happening on every level of the human experience, in the sense that our food corrupts us now, our politics corrupts us, the money system corrupts us. All this creates within I was trained in Raja Yoga, just like you and your lovely. And in India, they talk about once the body reaches a certain level of corruption, this opens up avenues or venues for extra dimensional energies, all different sorts of things that could come in and corrupt your consciousness. Your body, your mind, and your consciousness are, all reflect one another. And it seems like the rate and the frequency in which we're subjected to the lowest level of consciousness, it corrupts us on a subconscious level to the point where we actually become reactionary and become part of the tool, you know, part of their tool, right? Like, mm-hmm. I have very good-hearted friends that are addicted to TV. And they watch, like, when I ask them what they watch, I'll, you know, every 3 or 4 years, I'll actually take in one of these shows that everybody's, you know, popularizing. And I'll watch the show, and because I don't watch TV, when I actually see the show, I'm like, first of all, I'm shocked by how stupid the show is. Like, just how utterly idiotic it is. And then I'm also shocked in the amorality of it. Like, almost everything that's being foisted upon us in music and in visual media that's mainstream, where there's a lot of money behind it, is amoral.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have these events that you cover that you show it's these are all amoral activities that are going on. And this level of corruption, you have the people that are actually causing the corruption have been corrupted. You know, like these Deadeye, you know, people, maybe they had such a high level of trauma-based mind control that they're actually soulless. Like, I have a friend of mine who does shamanic soul retrieval, and she talks about very, very vividly. She'll say, when a soul is traumatized, the consciousness becomes fragmented. And it can get fragmented to the point where anything can come in and fill the void. Nature hates a vacuum. You know, Mother Nature abhors a vacuum. So when I think of somebody like, you know, Bush Jr., right? Like, I have no idea. I was just presented with his persona, his political persona. But looking at his eyes, his beady little eyes, I could only imagine if his dad and his granddad are who they are, that man wasn't subjected to a massive amount of mind of trauma-based mind control. And now I'm starting to learn about the ritualistic black magic that are used in all these secret societies, and that's all the fraternal orders do, is they traumatize the hell out of you. I should say traumatize the hell into you. And then you become a vessel for that. You become a conductor of that. It's the only way to, like, as Chip Tatum's case proves out, it's the only way to stay alive. Like, you have to serve death to stay alive. And if you look at it economically right now, in the United States, you look at the gross domestic product of the United States, what are the two industries that are the majority of the GDP in the United States? The first is the chemical industry. You know, whether it's oil, pharmaceuticals, all that, which is just death. You know, it's distributed slow death, slow kill. And then you have the other death industry, which is military. Right? And now they're making the third largest industry drugs. So one of my mentors when I was a few years ago was extremely wealthy, and he smacked me out of my naivety. He was very wealthy, and he had gotten out of the game, and he was sort of the reason why I left for Costa Rica. He said to me, he goes, there's only three currencies on the planet, gold, oil, and drugs. And that was something I did not want to hear. But now when you look at the actual GDP of the United States, he's exactly right. I mean, that is exactly, like, he was on the money. It's this sacrifice. It's this Kronos mythos where Kronos eats his future progeny so that he may stay in power. You know, and it's this deplorable amorality that is being, you know, really on a extremely high frequency impressed upon everybody. And that's why I think, like, all the social media tools have been allowed to get out there, is because now people's opinions form so quickly, and their mind is all, you know, tuned to the frequency of clickbait, where their opinions are formed strictly with their emotional body and not actually informed by their prefrontal cortex. It's an amazing thing to watch. And I'm sorry I went on a little rant there, but it's just like when you talk about these people in the military and what they've had to go through to actually do what they have to do. Now, we're all just as civilians are being subjected to this thing on this ever-increasing rate. What do you think with what's happening right now in Europe, or Europe and the United States? Do you have a date in mind where this whole thing might crescendo?
Nope. I think that we have messed up their timeline many times. I hope I am a major boil in the butt for them, me and other people who are doing everything we can to disrupt the timeline that they're so dependent on. I think that the what they had planned was 2012. That was the date when they really wanted the big bang, sort of, and that they failed there. Then they had to regroup, and especially in 2015, they were really going for it again in the autumn, around September, with Jade Helm and all of these other operations coordinating together with the NATO exercises in Scandinavia. And they were really trying to force us into it, and then with these different terror acts, get us into the corner where they could finally get us. And they failed there again. So they had to regroup, and now they're trying again. Now they're speeding it up once again. But every single time they do, more and more of us become aware of it. Do you know, because like the term false flag operation, we were very few people, as far as I know, that even knew about it before Boston. And then when you look at Google searches, when the Boston bombing came, it went from more or less zero, the term, the expression false flag operation, went from almost zero to like off the charts.
That's amazing.
You know, so many people, so they messed it up for themselves, because in the old days they used what is called stepping stone tactics, you know, a little here out to the left, a little out to the right, you know, nobody notices that these two steps are connected, a little in the middle, a little in the to the left, a little to the right, and nobody noticed. But slowly, slowly, you push the population into a corner where you can control them. But now it is at a point where they've had to speed it up, and it's getting more and more sloppy. It's getting more and more obvious what's going on. So even so-called normal people that have been totally unaware of what's going on, so many things are starting to like, hang on. This is so weird. I mean, again and again, and this and that. And so even these people are coming to a position where they say something is not right. And we're being told things that are not true. And can you really trust politicians anymore? And because the corruption have become so obvious. And also these conspiracies that are totally built on lies. When you build lies on lies on lies and lies and lies and lies and lies, and lies, it starts leaking, and it starts becoming very, very smelly, and this is where we're at.
You think because this is a veritable den of vipers, I mean, these people, if they don't have, if they are coming from such an amoral state, they would actually have plans in eliminating populations for their own personal gain. They themselves must have a ton of infighting that goes on. There must be, like, within... the one thing I know about power-hungry people is they see everyone as their enemy. Mm. You know, there's not like, oh, it's just that group over there. The people that I know, I've only been aware of being around two psychopaths. But the two psychopaths I was around, I became very, very conscious of how they actually view the world. And the psychopathic energy is very much that everybody, everything is the enemy. Everybody is to be taken advantage of. So I could only imagine when you have a den of psychopaths hanging out together, you know, there would have to be so much like internal conflict that's going on, unless there's a secondary or tertiary power that they're all feeding their amorality to. Have you come across any evidence for something that they're actually giving their energy to other than their own personal agenda?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but what I'm seeing is a lot of almost satanic worshiping these dark, dark forces, because these people are in deep shark waters. I tell you, I do not envy them, because they're surrounded by like-minded. And you, also you judge the rest of the world from where you come from, or your way of thinking. And these people have been drawn together, all of them, based on lies, deceival, violence, killings, murders, terror acts. All of, can you imagine being in a room where you're just like, oh, holy shit, all of us are mass murderers. And so even though they might look very decent in nice suits and with ties and so on, they are mass murderers, most of them. You know, right. they've signed papers that have caused multiple deaths and so on, or involved in vaccine schemes or whatever, that are killing people or spreading viruses or spreading death. And this is the thing. And we were talking about corruption before. It is so important for the power structure. As soon as a new member comes in, they need to corrupt that person. And this is where these pedophile gang comes in, you know, with these secret sex parties and so on. Just in, like in Eyes Wide Shut,
right.
These type of very bizarre sex games and so on, where people are invited because now you can be with the big boys, you know, and they're being flattered and lured into this. And suddenly there, you know, drugs and prostitutes and boys or girls underage, whatever you want, you can have it. Come. So they do, not being aware of that there are cameras everywhere and recorders and everything, photographers, everything, so that it can be used against you. You corrupt yourself, and then they want their steel grip around your balls, so that any little sign of you starting to get second thoughts, they have you. So I tell you, the FBI, with all the beautiful body they have, what are they using it for? Check out what Hoover was using FBI for, and it's just continued. The FBI, to a large extent, I'm not talking about every single FBI agent. Of course, there are many, I'm sure, honorable and honest people. But the main thing with that organization is to collect power tools against their own, or people in their own power structure, and also to cover up these things. Because all the big events, so-called terror acts in the US, I think out of 24... 23 of them was funded, trained, equipped by the FBI. It's not a secret anymore. Judge Giuliano and Napoleon, have shown it very clearly. And many, many others, like myself, have done so much to expose these things. And every single time, it's this organization that is there to cover up the tracks and just make it all disappear. But that is just one working then together with all of these different ABC and CIA and NSA and NSC and all these alphabetic organizations that are all working together towards a very dark agenda.
Well, that's the thing about the psychopath is if you're going to extrapolate and project the characteristics of a psychopath onto what we see as a democidal government. Psychopaths on a personal level, they always have to erase the history. You'll never know a psychopath's true path, because they can't stop lying. What is that called? They're pathological liars. So when you look at our governments are pathologically lying to us. They're always pathologically lying. They're saying, okay, we're gonna do this, we're here for this, yada, 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 this is where we come from. And now we're finding through revisionist history and through studies like yours that it's all lies. So they have the first characteristic of a psychopath. Then when you look at policymaking, almost all the policymaking is antithetical to your survival. Whether the policies are about, you know, fleecing the future of your youth to inflation or to taxes, whether it's public policy around health, all these different things are there to hurt you. They're not there to benefit you. Well, that's exactly the way a psychopath works. A psychopath, when they are in your fold, everything, every single one of their actions there is to disempower you. That's their whole thing, is because they're trying to get to a position of power that cannot be overtaken, right? So their strategy is to disempower those around them. So our governments really display this. They're pathologically lying, and they're consistently disempowering us. And then on a large scale, they actually physically kill us in the form of wars, or, you know, let's go ahead and blow up some Twin Towers. Let's do these things. Let's sacrifice people, right? And so what I've been seeing in my studies is that there's so much sacrifice that's going on. There's this sacrifice mentality. And it's never the sacrifice. It's like homicidal people, they never sacrifice their own, at least not to the public. They're always sacrificing the innocents, innocent people, or they pretend like they're sacrificing the innocent, right? They're either doing it, or they're always the presentation is such that it's always the sacrifice of innocence. And that's really, really demeaning to one's soul. And so I know for a fact, like somebody that's doing the work that you're doing and exposing this stuff, people like Chip Tatum, I really have this mind's eye that I'm not naive. I know that they allow certain information to get out there so they can track those personality types that would actually follow it. There always needs to be a control within an experiment, right? So they always know that the human spirit, if it hasn't been fully corrupted, will always opt to know the truth, because the truth is freedom, which is where we come from, where our soul comes from. So they always need to have like these little pressure valves that open, you know, like people like you that like will expose the truth, so that will act as a control, as a flow form, to see what types of minds gravitate towards that, so that things can be refashioned. My question to you is, why are they getting so sloppy? You would think they would start to refine what it is that they're doing to a point that people like you and I couldn't see it. Why are they, it seems like they're just getting dumber and dumber. Is it because they're in a rush? We know their budget is on, like there's no such thing as a budget with these people. Why are they making it sloppy now? Why can we see things so easily?
I think it's a combination of things. I think sloppiness sometimes because of haste, or if their timeline gets interrupted. According to Chip, every time we mess up their timeline, so many different events depends on that things goes the way they want it. So if one of these events gets kicked out, then suddenly they have to rechange their plans and regroup and... So it can really mess it up for months, you know. So sometimes they need to speed up. But also I think what you're talking about is very true. I believe that many times they're putting it out there to check who reacts, you know. It's like if they put out a fishing net and it was very tight, or the only fish they would get, no, sorry, the other way around. If it was very, very big, the only fish they would get would be like people like myself, you know, that they already know about. So it's like by making it so obvious, that's when they can start tracking you on Facebook and so on. Who likes it? Who shares? Who joins up, you know, to map future resistance, and also to see that, okay, once we get into a position where we can take the final step, in one go, boom, we can just take, we know the whole, we've already mapped the whole resistance, future resistance. That was what Khomeini did in Iran after the revolution. He let them have 6 months of absolute freedom, where all the resistance groups came up and walked in the streets and were talking, dancing, you know, giving speeches, thinking they were in paradise after they got rid of the Shah. not understanding that Khomeini just took over the security forces, like the Savak, the secret police and so on, and gave them the option, you work for me, I'll chop your head off. So most people chose, once again, to stay alive and started working for Khomeini. Mapped the whole future resistance pattern or the whole resistance that could be a future problem. And then overnight, 6 months after he took over, boom, they made mass arrests, arresting thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And not only did they take that person, but they took their families and their kids and their friends and so on, just to make sure that they would have no problem. But it doesn't work like that. It works for a while, but it's very, very messy. So I think this is, you know, like sometimes on TV, they put like, do you want to win $500? Answer this question. You know, is an egg white or is it black? Do you know, the question is on such a low level, right, that hundreds of thousands will answer it. This is how they get you into whatever competition they want. But here's on the other way. How can you make as many people, how can you find out who is totally asleep and who is not? Are there some people starting to wake up? Let's get those as well. So this is one reason I think they put it right in our face, saying, can you see it? Can you see it? And then since Facebook and many other social media is totally their tools, they can totally map it and control what's going to happen. So there is a danger by sharing and commenting on Facebook and liking and so on. At the same time, it is a two-edged sword, because it is through these social media as well that we can make a massive difference.
Right.
So
I have this theory that the cream rises to the top. And when you become psychopathic, another characteristic is you're not all that creative. You actually are kind of stupid, because you're running from the root centers. So you need to recruit talent. And so I actually look at this as a recruiting ploy of theirs, in the sense that in by able to virtually map everything, you can actually see where the resistance would be. The resistance is like, you know, if 99 sheep go with the flock, you know, follow the one that goes, you know, as Jesus said. Mm-hmm. Like, that's intelligence. It's the one, it's the 1% that resists this. It's the ones that are like, no, this is a contradictory thing. That's a sign of intelligence. So maybe it is like Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut. Those that do have resistance but are intelligent enough to be able to interact and be eloquent get recruited into the fold at some point, because they need to have a gene pool. They need to be able to bring in what they would consider an asset. They could give a shit, because a psychopath doesn't care about anything other than what it can get. You know, it has no empathy, right? So if they get to a certain point where it's like, okay, our gene pool is diminishing. We only have this amount of intelligence here. We don't have that much creativity. How are we going to recruit without recruiting? Well, let's do something like have social media. Let's have something where people will just profile themselves. And we'll have algorithms to see, okay, mm-hmm. We know that the absolute most intelligent people won't say shit. they won't ever interact with this, because they'll be intelligent enough to know that they don't want to be profiled. Mm-hmm. Then you have the second tier of people that will just say enough, and they'll have algorithms to be like, oh, okay, this is a IQ of whatever, right? And then they'll have people like you and I that are vociferous, that they have to keep around, in the sense that, okay, this person is acting as a nodal point, as a avenue by which we can see, okay, this is how we're going to reformat things, or this is how we're going to present things differently. This is excellent. We know now how to do things. This is just a theoretical notion of mine, but if I was of the hive mind, if I was of this psychopathic, this type of oligarchical control grid, that's exactly how I would do it. And it just makes sense. Like, I can see it actually, I can see that. I can see that avenue working. So I know that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I'm getting to a point now where I cannot see the degradation of our culture going all that much further. And I can't see the degradation of just the inhumanity of things that's occurring and the inhumanity amongst people. You know, just everyday people. Like, I'm seeing this, there's just, people are just becoming more robotic and less human, right? And I'm wondering what the actual goal is. I'm wondering, like, at the end of the road, if the democidal psychopaths got their way, what is their nirvana? What is it that they're trying to accomplish? What do you think that is?
I tell you, I've never been able to understand the mentality that is behind this. And I was on one radio show once, and we were talking about this, and I said, I don't get it. And he said, the only reason you don't get it is because you're not a psychological murderer, or a psychopathic murderer.
Right. Right.
Because if you were, this would make total sense, you know? So, but I really look at it as, what is the mentality behind a cancer growth? You know, it's trying to survive, it's trying to multiply, but it's killing itself. It's killing the carrier, its host. And I'm sure there is a logic to it, but I just don't get it. But I really think that it's almost like we're at a point where everything is upside down. What you think is white is black. What you think is up is down. What you think is good is bad. What you think, it's like everything has been turned upside down. And it was one of the former CIA directors, Chasey, who said that we have not succeeded until everything the American population believes are based on lies. Everything,
right.
Everything. And here we are in a situation where I'm learning more and more on a daily basis where that I thought was true, and then it turns out that as well has turned out to be lies. And when you look at these operations, like these false flags, there's so many of them, they're building on each other. You know, they build on top of each other. So they keep referring in media, this latest Brussels attacks, you know, oh, it's the same culprits as from November 13. They're connected with them, and then they're connected with them. And this is the same as the London bombings, and the London bombings was, you know, the same grouping, and they used the same explosives at the Madrid bombings. And so they keep building these things up. But when you start looking at them and debunk each and every single one of them, that was so based on total lies. And that one is totally lies, the official story as well. But they build it up as being true. So they're building up a whole image,
right,
of terror in the world that is not there.
Right, right. Absolutely.
I tell you, after all of these years, I don't think there is such a thing as a real terrorist, like the way they're being portrayed. I don't think so. I've never come across a real one.
I think you're right. I absolutely think you're right. And, you know, I've just recently gotten into, because I've been following the same beat of thought that you have. Almost everything historically that was presented to me in the United States was absolutely false. Even the chronology of things I'm finding to be false. The timing of things, like looking at the difference between the Gregorian calendar and the Julian calendar, and just the way time cycles work. I mean, you talk about severing a person from their ancestry, lying to them about the actual time, but like the time at which things happen, you know? And so I'm forgetting their names now, but there was a German historian that was a mathematician and a Russian historian that was a mathematician that both were like, look, everyone, all of what you're reading about in history has been rewritten. Almost none of this stuff is original, because they could see the mathematical algorithms in it. They could actually see it and go, no, wait. This was all written at the same time. somebody has gone to a massively large extent to erase our true history. And when I look at the different science that's being foisted upon us now, let me put it this way, the technocratic depiction of what we're going through negates our spiritual essence. You know, the materialist dogma of the technocracy is really making us as humans invaluable. And when you look at the rate at which we're exposed to all this, you know, stage death, murder, and destruction, along with the actual death, murder, and destruction that governments go ahead and do, it's all pointing to this inconsequential, atheistic view that none of it actually matters. We're all just a dust floating in the wind type thing, right? And I think they're trying to really have us convinced that we're useless, that we're powerless. And I don't believe that at all. I actually think, I feel we're a dignified species if we choose to be, right? So how do you see this from a spiritual perspective? Do you see this as a war, the war on humanity as a war on our spirituality? Have you ever gone that way with your thinking?
God, yeah, I totally agree. It's like it's a war on so many different levels, and it is the spirituality they fear, I think, because that is the power that they cannot control. You know, if you are a strong spirit, they can't reach you. If you're fearless, they cannot reach you. If you're fearful, they can control you. If you're corrupt, they can control you. So it's like, it's almost like you have this sphere that is, if you are a complete human being and your soul is strong, your bubble is sort of like whole and complete and beautiful and cannot be entered by a virus. But they need to crack you so that their virus can enter and destroy you from inside. So,
Ollie, let me add this to your discourse. Can I? I'm so excited
about
this. Have you heard of Dr. Jennifer Daniels?
No.
Okay, she's this brilliant doctor that is no longer practices medicine in the United States because she wasn't prescribing drugs, so she was essentially deemed a terrorist.
Oh God!
But she cures people. You know, she actually cures people of things. So her practice is now in Panama. She's absolutely brilliant. I love this woman. It's exactly what you're saying. You use the word puncture, and that's why I had to interject this. She's of the notion that vaccinations are the number one culprit for why family is disappearing on the planet, because the primary function of a parent is to protect and feed their kids. When you're a parent and you allow your child to be jabbed, to be punctured, it's like the snake bite over and over and over again. The child subconsciously will not trust the parent. If you don't trust somebody, you can't love them. And she's really of the mind, she's been all over the world. She sees the areas of the world where there aren't vaccinations. The children are actually extremely respectful to the parents, are actually very loving, like no matter what, even if the parents are somewhat tyrannical or, you know, in the West what you would consider strict, it doesn't matter. The kids, you know, kind of trust their parents. Everywhere in the world that she's gone where the kids are being punctured or jabbed, the kids are disrespectful, push away, resist. The second hormones hit their system, they're really out the door. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's this notion of like being, you know, if you're completely healthy, you cannot be penetrated. But here, the indoctrination is immediately, if you're a boy, we're going to snip your penis skin off and we're going to jab you with a needle. How like, you're instantly corrupted. Like, instantly corrupted, right? And it's amazing. Like, I live in a community where there's lots of natural child birthing and child rearing that's going on. And it's such a beautiful thing. It's so different, you know? And these kids that grow up, they're alive. They're really alive. Mm-hmm. It's this beautiful thing. And I'm so glad I've been exposed to that. I just had to interject that when you use that word. I was like, oh, this is so essential for people to hear.
I think, you know, when you look look at the immune system. If you leave the immune system or boost it, it is miraculous. It is incredible, this divine thing that can take care of anything. And it will keep you whole, even though things will try and enter. It will just keep you whole. If you keep your spirit the way it's supposed to be and your aura, it will just keep you protected. And this is why they need to crack you. They need to break you. They need to destroy this shield you have around you. And that is why they try to, in any way or form, to corrupt you. And if they can't do it in a physical way, they will try to do it mentally. And so when people say, so what can I do? I'm not this, I'm not that. I say what you can do is heal yourself, you know, and bring back the strength. Become fearless. Because then once you're fearless, then you're one that can make a difference, because you will not buy into whatever they try to throw at you. So through meditation or whatever it takes for you to get in balance, also the benefits of being in balance is fantastic, because suddenly you will start treating people around you in a beautiful way, respectful way, loving way, at the same time as you become a warrior, maybe in a non-violent way, just with these martial artists, you know, where most of the ones that I met, the masters that you are talking about, these type of people, they wouldn't hurt a fly. And at the same time, right, they can break down a wall with their little finger, you know, their pinky thing. They can go through a brick wall. But these are very gentle people. Once they know how to focus their intention in the form of whatever is needed. So that gives you that security as well.
Right.
So
that's wonderful. Ollie, I know I have to be sensitive to your time. You have to get out of here pretty soon. Where can people come and see your work?
My website is Light on Conspiracies, because that is exactly what I intend to do, to bring light into the darkest of the dark corner. Just like there was a fantastic man called Mike Rupert, who unfortunately is not with us anymore. He committed suicide a year or so ago. And he was part of exposing the Iran-Contras, 9/11 and so on. He worked for some of these agencies before. But what he said, he described exactly his role, and I feel people like myself as well, as the scout, the one that is being sent out on his own into enemy country, who has to go all the way into the darkest of the dark, into the belly of the beast, stay in balance, stay in focus, even in these dark areas, and then bring back information that can help their own people. And when he said that, I tell you, I was crying when he was filmed just a month before he died. And I so resonated with that.
Right.
Anyway, so my website is lightonconspiracies.com. And I've written several books. One is Coup d'etat in Slow Motion. You can find them on Amazon. Another one is Shadow of Tears, about how I went on a bicycle from Sweden. I was heading towards South Africa, ended up in Iran in the middle of the war instead. And then one of my new friends, Iranian friends, was murdered. And I helped some of the other friends, in total, I think, 7, from Iran through former Russia, East Germany, up to Sweden, where they're now having a great life, I hope. Shadow of Tears. I've got another one, a small little power book called Remind Me, which is based on not only Raja Yoga, a 5,000-year-old philosophy upon how to control your mind and make it your friend, but also I've tried to put all together in one little power book, all the different religions, all the whole thing about the matrix, what we're living in, this three-dimensional, whatever it is, illusion we are in. And I put it together like as a little game manual, where the game is your life and how you can deal with it, how it's working and so on. So that one is called Remind Me.
That sounds genius. I want that.
Perfect. I've also written a book for kids that is called Yolanda Yoga Panda. It's a small little bear, a yogi bear. And she takes a walk through life with her two friends, and it's called "The Truth Is One, Paths Are Many," meaning we all want the same. Normal people all want the same, I would say. We look for happiness, we look for joy, we look for a way to feed ourselves, our kids, to get our kids educated, to all of these things. None of us wants to kill other people, or if we are in a healthy state of mind and body, absolutely not. We just want to be left alone. And truth is one, paths are many. We all want the same, but we come from so many different angles. And it's just like all roads lead to Rome. Why attack other people because they choose a different route? Look at them, look in their eyes, and you will see they want the same as you. Doesn't matter if they're black or white or green or yellow or Hindu or Sikh or Christian or Muslim. We all want the same, basically. And I saw this incredible, they went around the world, a group of scientists, and just asked people, what do you want out of life? And it turned out that everyone wanted more or less the same. 95% wanted more or less the same. No, they wanted the same. And then there was 5% where it started to differ, like where religion, politics, sports, these type of thing came in and interfered with it. But otherwise than that, 95% was the same. And this is also where the so-called elite are very aware of that, because one of the few tools they have is divide and conquer. They go in and they divide so that we believe that we are each other's enemies instead of seeing who is the real problem. And what I'm trying to do is create total harmony in the world. I'm not giving up until there's no war, there's no injustice, there's absolute peace, harmony, compassion. And I know it sounds like Chip Salem said, that sounds like a Miss America speech. I know that, and I don't care. I am gonna try my best. And I'm going to succeed or not. At least my intention is that, and I will stick to that. And maybe I'll die as a total failure, but at least I tried.
Ollie, you're one of the few people that I know that has total integrity. Because what you just described, I've played on many bad teams before, where I knew that we were going to lose the game. Right? Because the team that we were playing against was obviously superior in many ways, right? But that did not negate my responsibility to give it my all, right? Like, as somebody that had pride and dignity in my own way, I had to give it my all. And that's really your beauty, is I know for a fact you give it your all. And I really love you for it. And I want to, and I give you all the protection that I have, all the protection I can afford, I give to you, because you really are a shining light over there across the pond.
It's very kind of you. And as they say, it takes one to know one.
Well, Ollie, I'll let you go, my friend. You have a great day, and I'll go ahead and send everybody I can your direction.
I would very much like to say, if anybody wants to support my efforts, there are donation buttons on the website. I'm not part of a group. I don't have a normal job to support. I live on selling my books, donations. I've got newsletter, I've got membership on my website, and so on. This is the way what I really need is some kind of help financially, because my intention is to stop these false flags once and for all. And I'm doing everything I can to, when these things happen, or hopefully before, to be able to go on location and expose these things on location while the operation is ongoing, to stop it. And I know I humbly would like to suggest that I've stopped more than 2 false flag massacres just by knowing their agenda, how they work, the methods, and so on. Because once you see how they're doing it, it is very simple to spot it. And I think the efficient thing is to go there and expose it. So help to be able to move around at the same time, feed my family. This is what I'm looking for. At the moment, I'm also in the process of making a series of documentaries on my own, where I go on location where these false flag operations have taken place, film it, and compare it then with the official story, and totally debunk the official story, so that on the screen in front of you is not me trying to persuade you. You can see for yourself, and I tell you without exaggerating, it will blow your mind if you are not aware of many of these things, because it's just incredible. I don't have to make anything up. These things are just so bizarre that it becomes so obvious once you just get it in front of your eyes.
It was amazing, the movie. Just to interject again, I feel like I'm always interrupting you. I'm sorry. When I saw JFK the first time, I was like 17 or 18 years old. And I was rocked to the core because of, they show Kevin Costner as Garrison in Dallas, pointing out everything. And even as a teenager, I could say, oh shit, the official story can't make sense because of what you're about to do. Like when you actually put yourself in the geography of a location and you have the three-dimensional intelligence to see, the story does not fit the geography. Then you can totally call bullshit on something.
This is why it's so powerful. And also, for me personally, it's incredibly interesting to be walking in the same footsteps, as whoever did it or wherever it happened, to be there. It is very, it is a very powerful experience to be there and then aim the spotlight right at it, because all of these things are built on deception and manipulation. It's tricks of light. They're playing with our minds, and we're not aware of it. So by aiming the spotlight right at them, showing these are the facts, this is the distance, this is the angle, this is why it's not possible, here's so and so and so and so and so. And I've done one pilot about the so-called beheading in Woolwich, where it said that there were two black Muslims that chopped the head of an English soldier. I mean, that operation that more or less everyone bought, it is total crap. It is so badly carried out that when you put it there, I mean, for someone like me, I love it. I love it because it is so obvious once you put it there next to each other, the official and the facts. So anyway, I'm looking for different ways to get that funded, and it's working the way it should. I've already been in Norway filming, Denmark filming, England. I've been in Madrid film where the bombs went off there, and I'm continuing around. So, but it's a very touchy area. Actually, I shouldn't speak about it, but because these operations are still ongoing, they do not like to be exposed because so much is built on these false flags, terror attacks. Right. So it's a bit like in out, with the candid camera or hidden cameras and discreet walking around in the background, but still filming, So, but what can I say? I really think that can make a major difference in the world by exposing it, because you do not have to be super clever when you see these things to see that, oh my God, we are being duped. We are being lied to on a scale that is unreal. And now I would very much like to finish with a prayer. After just mentioning my darling Kim's book that you have had a show about before, it's called So What Can I Do? It's an excellent book about what can I do now when I'm starting to wake up and so on. So it's on Amazon, Kim Ekman, So What Can I Do? But here comes the prayer. May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who heard us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light. Because the secret is we all need to heal. They need to heal as well. Otherwise, this madness will just continue. And with that, I will be quiet.
Thank you so much, Ollie. I my heart goes out to you. I'm going to send everybody I can. Everything I can do to help you, I will be doing it. So until next time, my friend.
Until next time. Right. You have a great one.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you again, family, for listening to the podcast. Ollie is the best. I know this is our second interview with him, and you could really feel his sincerity and wanting to help all of humanity. Please share the podcast. I'm about to get into some more, I guess you would deem them like A-lister type of people, and they usually require to have a pretty big following if they're going to grant interviews. So that type of thing I want to give to you guys. So the more you like and share my podcast, the more that gives me the capacity to get in there and interview people that have more influence, at least in the media world. So go to my website, biocharisma.com. Like me on iTunes. Leave a comment there in iTunes. Yeah, that's all that I really ask for. And hopefully, like I said, this upcoming week or the next week, I'll be having Sophia Smallstorm, either Sophia Smallstorm, Mike Williams, or Eric Dubay on. So thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. We'll raise it.